This week on Retronauts, we look back on when bow ties were cool. Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's topic is Nestor. Before I go on to explain who Nestor is and why you should care, who else is here with me today? Who's across from me?
Henry Gilbert, and I just ate 99 pizzas, as I was told to by a little child.
That is a filthy lie, and that child is just a scoundrel. And who do we have on the line?
We got Bill Mudrin, best play control Mudrin from the, what podcast am I on? Tardy the Party podcast? these guys just looped me in because I guess I have something to say about Nestor because I worked on the last, I guess it wasn't the last Howard and Nestor comic for Nintendo Power. It was Nestor. Wasn't Nestor and his son Maxwell?
Yes, that's the comic.
I drew the damn thing. I don't remember.
You're part of the rich tapestry that is the Nestorverse.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the third generation Nestor content I was able to contribute to. So, yeah.
Well, this topic entered my mind because Jeremy, of course, does the Virtual Boy Works episodes for YouTube. And one of those games for Virtual Boy he did an episode about is Nestor's Funky Bowling, a very odd license to have in 1995. And during that episode, you can hear me say, I'm doing a Nestor episode. I'm earmarking it now, and now here I am doing it, and no, I have not run out of ideas. I still have lots of ideas for Retronauts, rest assured, but Nestor is an interesting thing as part of the history of Nintendo propaganda I really want to talk about.
Have you guys not done a Howard and Nestor episode yet?
I mean, this is our Howard and Nestor episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was wondering if you're going to divide the comic into two halves.
Oh, no, absolutely
now, you'll
not.
You'll finally do that, like, talking about the Howard. I mean, you can always do a Howard Phillips episode, but I like the idea of just, like, devoting a whole mini episode to just Howard Phillips in his cartoon form. But yeah.
Oh, we are going to talk plenty about Howard, but before I continue, just to give some context, Nestor was a character in the original Nintendo Power comic, Howard and Nestor, which ran from the first issue until around 1993, and it went through many different changes. And, of course, Bill on the podcast here, long after the comic was retired, he returned for the final issue of Nintendo Power to be the last artist of that comic franchise.
I had no idea Nintendo Power still existed until, like, I think a year before the last issue hit. Someone asked me if they could do an interview with me about some video game maps I had drawn. And yeah, it pains me to say it, but I had no idea Nintendo Power still existed until that interview.
Well, as somebody who worked at the publisher of that, I'm not super surprised. The behind the scenes history of Nintendo Power was that it was published by Nintendo for the longest time, but when they were not wanting to publish it anymore, it got purchased by Future Media, which no one knows the name Future unless you were paid by them. But they own the website Games Radar I used to work at, Official Xbox Magazine, the unofficial PlayStation Magazine that then turned into the Official PlayStation Magazine. And when I started at Future, that was in 08 when they purchased Nintendo Power. And so they're like,
I was going to say, it was only a couple years before the closure. Yeah,
now they had them about 5 years before it finally got shut down.
So Nintendo Power, we did an episode about it. It was episode 19 of this independent run of Retronauts. We give a lot of context as to what it is. But to wrap it up really quickly here, it was essentially propaganda made by Nintendo. And you know what? It was really good propaganda. It worked on a generation of children.
Propaganda, the best propaganda.
Because nobody was making a magazine about Nintendo games that came out every other month and then every month. It made you feel like you were part of something.
Yeah, you were part of a secret club when you got that magazine in the mail.
And as somebody who was reading Nintendo Power magazine alongside its competition, it was usually better. Like, it had way better screenshots, or it had way, at least the quality. I'm not talking about its independent reviews of things. That quality was low on that metric. But if you wanted a guide to where to jump to in Super Mario Brothers or Zelda, you couldn't beat it.
Well, and the comics like Nestor, Howard and Nestor, is what exactly kind of helped set Nintendo Power apart from all the other gaming magazines, was the fact that they would actually spring for extra content like that. It wasn't just news and reviews, which, again, Nintendo Power was never very good at because it was mostly about the tips and everything like that. But yeah, it was the fact that they sprung for extra stuff like even aside from the comics, but like even the Illustrated Howard and Nestor awards and stuff. Mm-hmm. There was kind of a presentation that they did that I guess was kind of taking largely from Famitsu magazine.
Oh yeah, like
that. Like other Western gaming magazines weren't doing at the time, which was interesting.
Part of the reason the magazines were so fun is because they used a very Japanese style layout. Like if you look at Japanese magazines even today, especially gaming magazines, they are so busy. Like lots of pop outs, lots of big texts everywhere. It's sort of the opposite of what the Next Generation magazine was, where it's just like white backgrounds with very square, sterile screenshots. Everything is evenly spaced. No, Nintendo Power is like different color text, headings, pictures, pop out art, pop out blocks of text. Like it's just a big fun mess on the page.
A random drawing of like a green or a guy with a baseball bat in the corner of an article about a gaming video game that didn't even have baseballs or baseball bats in it. Just random stuff. It was all very chaotic. Yeah.
Yes. Just like, well, we got empty space. We got to fill it. Fill that empty space.
It felt like the mind of a 12-year-old in the best possible way, in the brightest, colorful way.
And they're still fun to flip through. And I will say that the reason why they're very Japanese is because, so Nintendo, you've heard us talk about Nintendo before, of course, and it was a way of subtly giving Americans who were slightly xenophobic Japanese entertainment.
It really is, yeah.
In a subtle way, like, let's kind of erase the Japanese-ness of this, but still, we want to sell you these products. Number one, Nintendo Power was very Japanese. In fact, it was laid out by a company called Workhouse USA. It was the American subsidiary of a Japanese group who worked under the publisher Tokuma Shoten, who I believe like co-owned Ghibli at one point in time.
You'll still see.
Oh, is that? I wonder if that's where the producer for Studio Ghibli. He worked for a manga magazine before jumping ship to co-found Studio Ghibli with Takahata and Miyazaki.
Yeah, that's Toshiro or Toshiro?
I can't specifically remember. If you ever see the documentary, The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness, he's pretty much the main character in that documentary.
Easily the most relatable guy.
He's the producer trying to rein in everyone else, and he's the guy who keeps Studio Ghibli running. But yeah, that's I didn't even think about that. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I just watched the Whisper of the Heart in theaters. They just did again. And yeah, it's Tokuma Shoten is one of the credited ones. Like even in 95, they were still working with Ghibli.
Wow. I think they were like co-funding or something like that. Anyway, they're connected. But more importantly, so by the time the late 90s rolled around, we just figured out as a society, like, no, American kids love anime. They love manga. They love these kind of drawings. But before then, publishers were like, absolutely not. Get rid of the big eyes. We don't need to see this. Kids will hate this. This is not American. That was all happening on the game publishing side. But in Nintendo Power, it was full of Japanese as hell drawings and illustrations and layout. They were not afraid to be Japanese, and the masthead was just full of Japanese names.
Because 12-year-old kid's not going to be looking at the masthead, but if you go back and look at that masthead, it is just, you would think it was just a Japanese magazine from just all the art credits and the layout and everything like that. And either they had the Western office kind of like, you know, overseeing the content with Gail Tilden and everything like that, but still, yeah, in terms of just getting the illustrations and all the text onto the paper, that was all very Japanese.
And eventually, overlapping with Howard and Nestor, the comic we'll be talking about soon, Nintendo Power would just straight up publish manga. Like, here is Mario manga. Here is Zelda manga.
Yeah, I missed all that stuff. But
That really was one of my first exposures to manga in that specific style was the Ishinomori's Zelda comic.
Yeah.
Like, it just felt so weird and different. Like, in 92, I was reading every American comic I could get my hands on. I was such a huge comic book fan, but I still wasn't reading much Japanese stuff. And so when I first saw these, like, sparse, eerie-looking drawings of, you know, Link going through caves and whatnot, it really struck me as like, wow, this is different. I don't know why, but this is so different.
Yeah, I've told a similar story about falling in love with anime and manga and sort of Japanese designs a bunch of times, but it was really like me trying to figure out like, why do these things look like this and who makes them and why do I like them? And like over time I found out, oh, these are from Japan and this is what anime is, this is what manga is. But from the very beginning, I was drawn to things like Howard and Nestor's original run and the Mario comic and the Zelda comic just because of like, this looks so different and cool. Where are more things that look like this?
It was alien and cool, especially which is rare in a magazine that was designed for American 12-year-olds. It actually did feel a little transgressive and a little like legitimately alien in a way that I don't think the people who were in charge of Nintendo Power kind of thought they were doing. It was,
and I know
it was. Oof.
I know friend of Retronauts, Chris Kohler, like in an interview with Miyamoto, Miyamoto had said like he had wanted that manga created of the Zelda one, at least, to kind of, you know, internationalize it more and introduce that that artist to the world.
And I think Miyamoto wanted to be a manga artist too, like before being a game designer as well.
Oh yeah, and you can even see a specific art influence in some of the early, like the cabinet artwork for Donkey Kong and Punch Out and stuff. He was the guy always giving all the characters little plus teeth.
Oh, I love those so much.
And yeah. And he's totally like influenced that by that whole kind of Tezuka Astro Boy kind of feel and stuff. And yeah, I could totally see how he could have wound up becoming a manga artist if he didn't end up falling into video games or, I guess, toy making, which I guess is what he's always said he would have done if he hadn't become a video game designer. But yeah, that's especially the original run of Howard and Nestor. That's one of the things I loved about Nintendo Power so much, aside from, you know, all the information about video games and stuff I loved and played at the time, was the graphic design for, oh God, you have the guy's name for who originally illustrated Howard and Nestor.
That's right, but, Shuji Imai.
Yeah, there was a Western sensibility in how he used watercolor and drew. It was very kind of Mobius looking, but the kind of the graphic sensibilities, and of course there's all the manga kind of like suddenly characters will suddenly turn chibi or something like that. That just permeates, I guess, all manga stuff. But yeah, it just looks so gorgeous. It looks so much better than a cartoon comic strip for Nintendo Power in 1988 had to look. And it only got better too. Once you got, I guess he only illustrated for a couple years, but like when he was like doing like some of the DuckTales strips and Howard and Nestor strips about like Mega Man 2, man, that stuff looks good. That's like Howard and Nestor was the DuckTales intro to the rest of Nintendo Power, just looking like the rest of a normal DuckTales episode, where you wonder why doesn't the whole magazine look.
It set the bar too high off the bat, but I want to talk about the comic really briefly about what it is to set it up. So Howard and Nestor, number one, we'll talk a bit more about him later, but Howard Phillips is a real person. Mm-hmm. He was a Nintendo of America employee who served a major role. So he was in the comic as the foil to Nestor, a fictional child who sort of represented the way kids would play video games wrong. Mm-hmm. And through the comic, he would be proven wrong by Howard, who would say, here is the actual tip for the game we're trying to tell you about, while Nestor gets it wrong every time.
It has a little Goofus and Gallant flavor to it, too. Like Nestor.
Yeah, Nestor's a little punk.
Yeah, I had, rereading these, I didn't realize what a punk Nestor was. Like, as a kid, I liked Nestor. I was like, yeah, Nestor's a cool kid like me.
He's the Bart Simpson. He's transgressive, and he does whatever he wants. But as an adult, you just want to slap the crap out of him.
In the beginning of the comics, it's like Howard is sort of there in the first panel. But as things go on, Nestor is like in the video game world saying, when's that fucker going to show up? I know he's going to show up. I know he's going to show up and ruin things.
That's one of the funny things about the comic is that, you know, Nestor's always digging himself into a deeper hole and getting more freaked out, and you know, he's turning more into a chibi mess caricature of himself, whereas Howard just like walks into whatever situation that Nestor has just dug himself into with his hands in his pockets and his little bow tie, and he's like, hey, what's going on, hey, let me help you out. And it's just kind of funny how the for a strip like that was a pretty good comedic dynamic they had between the two characters, even though, you know, again, it was just an excuse just to give out one last extra little video game tip in a magazine. But it was cute. It worked. It was great.
I want to talk a little bit about Howard Phillips, though, because we could do a whole podcast about him and his career. Mm-hmm. He sort of just came out of hiding in 2012. I mean, he was always a semi-public person, but in 2012, that's when he came out and said, I want to tell all my stories now, and I want to give interviews, and I'll have my own Facebook page. So a lot of this information came out after 2012. I believe I was at the Classic Gaming Expo in 2012 when he gave one of his first like public speaking appearances.
Yeah, Howard Phillips, he started doing the the contour schedule. I wonder if he's like, you know, the kids are off to college now, I got free time again.
I think so.
You know?
I always assume someone like that has either got a Kickstarter or they've got like cancer. And oh, they're just coming out trying to like just
I think he actually did have a Kickstarter too.
For a failed app. But he does not dress like Howard in the comics with the nice suit and bow tie. He's very much like vacation dad with like a nice button up and kind of a blousy button up and shorts and sandals.
Yeah.
I mean, we were in Vegas, so.
I always got the feel from Howard Phillips. He's like, he's your cool dad who plays video games. Like, that's how he was pitching himself to our generation of kids.
Even though, like, at the time, wasn't he just like a 25-year-old kid just like working in their warehouse?
Yeah, he was in his mid to late 20s. So Phillips started in 1981 when Nintendo of America was basically a mom and pop shop. With 6 employees, he was one of them. So in a fairly short amount of time, he went from basically like unloading trucks with Donkey Kong machines to being the Japan-America liaison. Like,
he was the mascot of Nintendo of America, practically.
Yeah, he did run test programs for arcade games and things like that, but he essentially became the one-man focus group. Like, Howard, play these games. Which of these games should be the Nintendo launch lineup? And he decided on that. And I find this dubious. But he claims to have finished every game that was released for the Nintendo during his tenure.
I'm sure he laid hands on every game that came through, but unless he had like debug mode turned on for every game.
That's possible. It's possible. Yeah. I mean, look, it's hard for me to distrust Howard Phillips because he was the, you know, like the most trusted man in my childhood. But that does sound a little impossible to have. Basically, he'd be doing that on top of what his full-time job was, which was being a PR spokesman for Nintendo.
Yeah. And he was PR spokesman. And we talked about him before where, again, this is the 80s. We are still harboring some resentment over certain wars and certain economic conditions.
People misunderestimate what a big deal that was, too. Like, Howard Phillips was the white face of Nintendo.
He really was. I mean, Nintendo was a scary Japanese word. Ooh, the president is Genyo Takeda. What does that even mean? Are they making fun of me? But no, Howard Phillips, Whitey McWhiterson. He's going to be there in a bow tie to tell you things are fine. Don't ask where the games are made. Just smile and nod.
We're taking all the crosses out of these games. Don't yell at us. It's okay. We'll fix this. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can see the fear of the Japanese thing even just a few years after Phillips left Nintendo. There was, when the story came out that Hiroshi Yamauchi was going to be the principal owner of the Seattle Mariners, the reaction to that was insane.
The only reason he bought or I don't know if he bought it outright, but the only reason he invested in the Mariners was, I think he specifically said he wanted to pay back the city because the Mariners were threatening to leave. And he was like, no, Seattle's always been really good to Nintendo. We want to pay this back. And of course, the media exploded saying, oh my God, look, the Japanese are taking over baseball.
Yeah, it's like the Mariners, Seattle would have simply not had the Mariners if it wasn't for Yamauchi. But, that also, though, led to some of my childhood confusion for a time in the pre-Wikipedia days. I knew of Howard Phillips from the comics.
But I almost said the wrong name myself a couple times in the podcast.
When I saw Howard Lincoln doing interviews for the N64, I was like, is that the guy from the comics?
Did he get hit by the aging ray? Why is he bald and lawyerly now?
It's like, wow, he really aged badly after leaving Nintendo.
What happened to him in Russia trying to negotiate those Tetris rights?
Howard Phillips and Howard Lincoln are different people, but they both worked at Nintendo.
I don't know. We still haven't seen them together in the same room.
It's true. But Howard Phillips was lured away to I believe JVC, who was producing.
I thought it was super weird.
I believe they were publishing LucasArts games for consoles, but he essentially was kind of sick of being Nintendo's PR face, and it was taking him away from games, and he wanted to be part of games and game development, but Nintendo wanted him just to be the face.
Well, and it sounded like a very heavy workload, too, though, because
I'm sure he didn't pay a lot, too. I mean, as kids, we're just assuming that he must have gotten paid in video games, and he must have been a millionaire, and who would want to turn down a job just playing video games all day, and I'm sure was not that glamorous.
Well, in David Seff's book Game Over, I remember a Howard Lincoln quote of him saying, like, you don't work at Nintendo to be rich. Like, their executive pay was more on the level of Japanese executive pay, which is very good pay, but not ridiculous ludicrousness of American executive pay. And so I would think that, I mean, it also sounded from, as I recall from other Phillips interviews, that it just sounded like they did expect him to still play a lot of the games while also having these responsibilities, which I think is a more standard expectation in a Japanese company than it is in an American company.
So these comics, they follow a very similar formula in which Nestor tries the wrong thing over and over again, and in the end he is owned by Howard, who has the right idea. I think it's funny because in the late 80s, early 90s, it is like the explosion of Nickelodeon and the idea of like kid power and kids rule and adults drool. But in this comic, every time a little brat is shown up by a sensible adult.
Yeah.
In this case,
yeah,
someone in their 20s, but
it's,
still.
It's so more culturally Japanese in that style, I think. Because I think around the exact same time, I was the biggest fan of the BK Kids Club. I'm like, finally, a place for cool kids like me to be cool. And
I forget you guys are a little bit younger than I am, which that just, yeah, that cracks me up. Okay.
But that's how I saw most things. But then in my child memory, I just thought, oh, yeah, it's Nestor hanging out with Howard. They're equals. But the comics are very clear. They are not equals. Like, Nestor is an annoying jerk who everyone hates.
And
that's
Howard.
The tenor of the comics is, hey, stupid kids. Yeah. Here's the adult to tell you actually how to do this stuff. The comic actually has kind of a condescending view towards Nintendo Power's own readership in that kind of way. It's kind of funny.
But we're talking about the Shuji Imai run, which was only 18 comics.
Yeah.
Again, they're very glorious. They're very well detailed. I will say that I believe over time it seems like Nintendo is shaking their finger at no, you can't just draw the Ninja Turtles in this comic.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Over time, the amount of licensed characters that appear shrinks drastically. Like, you're talking about the DuckTales comic, Bill.
Is that really just like a duck shows up, but it's not like any of the characters?
There are just ducks with space helmets on, yeah.
I feel like they must.
I didn't even pick that up. Okay, yeah, that's hilarious.
I feel like they must have gotten in big trouble for that Turtles one.
Yeah,
like,
the Turtles one was them crossing the line where in the Turtles comic, Nestor is literally hanging out with the Turtles. April O'Neil is there. They're drawn doing all their turtle stuff. They say it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's April O'Neil.
They're putting words
with those weirdly drawn Ninja Turtles with those kind of weird opaque masks, and they all look kind of.
I love how
like,
creepy they are.
Ugh, don't like those designs. But yeah.
I love the sneers. I love a classic blank-eyed turtle sneer. That's,
God.
Yeah,
that's funny. Like, Mega Man stuff showed up, but like, yeah, I can imagine, especially as Nintendo got more popular and the third-party licensees had a bigger say in like how Nintendo can handle their content in the magazine. Yeah, I could see the things must have gotten tricky for the content for the Howard Nestor strip, yeah.
One thing I did notice that's interesting about this strip is that also I believe Imai is doing the English lettering, which is why it looks very awkward. It looks like
looks like a crazy person wrote it.
It looks like someone who doesn't really draw English characters too often doing it, like, for the first time.
Well, it looks like from a collection of stencils of,
It's funny because you'll have, like, word balloons at the beginning of the strip where it's, like, these fast, empty word balloons with just a couple words within the word balloons with all this empty space. And then the next panel, you'll have like 20 words crammed into this tiny word balloon that's way too small. And I don't know what was going on there. Like, I don't know if that was like somebody at Nintendo of America like sending a script to him and he had, I don't know how much English he knew or what. Yeah, some of the strips also have paste overs with like typed text.
Okay, I mean, if we were to draw, if someone would hand us like Japanese and say, okay, replicate this written Japanese on this piece of paper, and then they publish that in the comic, people would be like, that looks awful.
Oh,
looks
like a child
drew that. But yeah, it adds to like the very handcrafted nature of these very detailed comics, though. The fact that it looks like it was painfully drawn in every little tiny letter.
Some of the layouts in them are like amazing to me, and that, like, I think there, I saw one page that had at least 12 panels on it, if not more.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just so.
No, it's an
so
ungodly
busy.
Amount of work for what that comic had to do.
For just two pages at some point. And then, yeah, some of them are just like so overloaded with text in the first panel that I feel that, like, they felt some pressure that they're like, this doesn't explain the setting enough. We need an entire first panel that's just 80 words explaining what Lone Ranger is.
Yeah, well, I get the feeling too. I'm sure they didn't have like a professional comics writer writing those comics. I'm sure it was somebody who may have never been paid to write anything before in their entire lives, now having to write the comics for these Howard, like somebody at Nintendo of America having to write these Nintendo Power scripts and then sending them off to Japan for to get illustrated. And then between that, yeah, and the guy having to write all this text that he doesn't know what it's maybe actually saying. And it creates kind of a stilted stew that's combined with the attractive art is very specific. It creates a very specific aesthetic to that era of the Howard and Nestor strips.
Oh, definitely.
I still love.
Imai's run only lasted for 18 installments. There were three final Howard and Estrid comics, but they were not drawn by him. But oddly enough, they still feature his header art with the Howard and Estrid drawings and the heads and the text. So Imai's header art is there.
And you did the research to see who actually drew those, right?
I did, yeah. So the first artist was Art Nichols, who also worked on the awful Valiant Nintendo comics.
Yeah.
Even as a Nintendo fan, I bought those and I was like, these are disgusting.
So as a mega comics reader, I did know Art Nichols from at Marvel and DC. He was kind of a fill-in artist in the 90s, which is, when the A-level artist needs to some time off to get back on schedule, they'll do a fill-in issue drawn by somebody. And that was usually Art Nichols' thing. So he's more of just a workman-like artist. And those Valiant comics, I was so disappointed reading those as a kid too. I still bought like three or four of them and just pored over them all the time. But like, once you're used to the immaculate art of Yoichi Kotabe in the manuals of Mario, then you see like this, the Game Boy one was just like Mario jumps out in the real world and it's just like offensive to the eyes. It's so ugly.
And you can even see how he's kind of tracing some of the faces from the original comics.
Yeah,
to try to stay on model a little bit, but the bodies aren't quite the same, and so I'm sure they were not paying a lot, and I'm sure the time. Well, we'll get that. I'm sure the deadlines weren't very good, so you end up just squatting out whatever you can to get the comic done, which is exactly what I did too. So I can't throw too many sticks and stones in that situation. But.
So, Henry, you're familiar with Jim Shooter, right?
Oh, very familiar with him. Yeah.
So I guess he was part of something called Voyager Productions, which is actually they owned co-owned Valiant Comics, or they own Valiant Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I noticed, there's a great article about Howard and Estrid and all the different artists. You can just search. If you search Howard and Estrid, there are like three links, and you'll find it. But he said, I was surprised to hear an American comics guy say this, but he said, quote, the Japanese were and are very proud of their comics industry. As a rule, at least at that time, they didn't think American comics were anywhere near as good as theirs. The consensus opinion was that they were the pros and we were quirky, amateur second stringers. But on the basis of our licensed comics for Nintendo of America, Nintendo of Japan picked us Americans to do their custom pack-in box art for F-Zero.
Huh. Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that part. Jim Shooter is Marvel's big dick energy guy of the 80s. Like he was like this wunderkind of comic writing where like he wrote his first comic at like 15, published by DC, and he just moved on up the ladder very quickly. And he was just a very aggressive businessman who made a lot of the big moves in 80s comics that then paid off into the 90s. And when he quit Marvel as their EIC, he then started his own company, Voyager, which I believe purchased Valiant. Valiant had existed before. And so it was like all these old characters like Magnus and Harbinger, and he rebooted them as new characters for the 90s comics boom. And part of the 90s comic boom too was that you just had to keep expanding. So Valiant, I would guess, probably, you know, they look more attractive than Marvel or DC because Nintendo's the big fish to Valiant. Like Marvel or DC might say, like, well, hey, we're Marvel, you can't tell us what to do. Valiant is the kohai to the senpai of Nintendo in that situation.
Interesting. Yeah, I had no idea about any of this. So yeah, Art Nichols was the Valiant artist who did the final three Howard and Estrid comics, and then continued to make Nestor's Adventures.
Oh, God, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, wrong-looking Nestor and his wrong-looking adventures, yeah.
Without Howard, so...
It made me unhappy.
What's funny is, like, so only through Facebook posts by Howard that we find out that Shuji Imai is the artist behind Howard and Nestor. But
yeah, because my own personal research into this before Howard had pointed that out, there was a lot of debate online as to exactly who that was and what exactly work that they had done for both Nintendo and also just other video game stuff. Yeah.
But the funny thing is that when Art Nichols took over, he got an entire like introduction by Howard. Like, here's our new artist, Art Nichols. He does this, and this. It'll be look a little different, but he's still very good. Like other artists got nothing, not even a credit.
Yeah. I mean, that feels more like, you know, the accepted practice in America is more like you have to credit the artist. Maybe in Japan it's more like, hey, it's for a magazine and you don't need a credit.
Yeah, but. And I feel like Shuji Imai, I think like his main role in life and career is commercial illustrations, where most of the time those are not credited to anybody.
Well, because the ad you're doing is the star, not your name. Like, so, yeah.
You're lucky if you can sneak your signature into the illustration that you're working on, yeah.
But the final artist for Nestor's Adventures, which they switched to very quickly towards the end, was a guy named Dan Spiegel, who was born in 1920. And his first
good
comic,
on him.
Yes, and his first comic was an Annie Oakley comic in 1956.
Wow.
And after that, he did the Hopalong Cassidy comic, which is very popular, selling millions of copies every month, presumably.
Wow.
So he went from cowboy comics in the 50s to sort of entering his twilight years drawing Nestor's Adventures.
Can you imagine?
Nintendo Power.
Hopefully it wasn't that difficult a concept to explain to him when he got the gig. Like, okay, there's these things called video games that you hook them up to your TV. Kids want to read this comic about how you have to sneak like tip for one of these video games into the
I would hope he had a grandchild that could at least play a Nintendo in front of him. Like, or who knows, he could have been a gamer grandpa. It's possible.
It wasn't 1920 is not that old for someone drawing something in the 90s, but still,
pretty old. 70,
it's still 70s,
But yeah, looking at his history, he mostly did like licensed comics for like Dell and Gold Key, so he was used to drawing characters that were not his in worlds he didn't know.
I mean, that seems to be a skill. I didn't really know, because if they didn't work at Marvel or DC or one of those top level places, I didn't follow the artists all that closely. So, but I mean, in both cases, they're just like, they're a shadow of what was created anyway. Plus they're not being paid on the level to really try to put an artistic stamp on it either. Or, I mean, would Nintendo of Power publishers even want them to draw them too different from how Howard and Nestor had looked before?
I don't think so. You never underestimate editorial influence on something that you're reading in terms of comic stuff. Because, you have no idea exactly what decisions were being made that were going over the artists and writers' heads. So,
So before Bill's final comic, there was an unpublished final comic, which was never made to be published. It was just made for Howard. Drawn by Imai. It's a very cool comic.
I had no idea this existed.
I just found it. Just like I said, there are four results if you search for Howard and Nestor. This is one of them. And it is an exclusive comic about Howard and Nestor, about Howard leaving. Mm. And it is full of spicy jokes about drugs and him calling Nestor a bastard. And
calls him a little shit.
Yeah,
I
it's like
that.
It's PG-13, but it's really fun. And it's extremely well drawn for being something that no one would see. I'm sure Nintendo paid them the same amount for it as a going away present.
Yeah, no, it's just a cute... I mean, you know... Japan takes their going away presents seriously, I think. You know, if it's an amicable split, of course. So that kind of gift is just such a great one.
Howard.
I'm reading the strip now. Howard turns into the speed demon while he's racing a little Mario Kart. That's fantastic.
That feels like they were driving in carts together to get ready. They're like, well, we're thinking of developing a kart racer. Let's go kart racing. Phillips is in town.
I love Imai.
I love the one panel where it's like, it's not even a video game. They're racing F1 cars, so it's tied into something, I guess. But
it's something,
Howard is running Nestor into the wall, and he's saying, take that, you little shit. Nestor is saying, Howard, listen to yourself. What would Gail say? And Gail was the editor-in-chief.
I love that.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
I love that shows that even we were thinking the same thing that they were thinking internally. Howard in every comic is just like, well, okay, Nestor, if you think that's the right door, and then Nestor's like, shut up, dork, I know what to do. And you just are thinking to yourself, Howard must be so pissed that this kid keeps telling him he's wrong and then fucking up. So now finally Howard in a real comic gets to let loose and be like, you suck.
I'm surprised Nestor survived that comic. But in the end, it's revealed that Howard's bow tie is a clip-on.
Next to last panel is Nestor taking the bow tie off of Howard,
And I have to wonder if that was real, because in the actual Nestor's Adventure comic, it's revealed in the first one without Howard that it was a clip-on all along.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That was really fun. In the rereading of it, because I remembered actually being kind of sad when the last Howard strip happened, because it seems like a joke in his last regular comic. It seems like a joke that Howard is leaving, of like, Howard says he's leaving, he'll be back in the next issue. Then in the next issue, Howard's name is X'd out and it's the Nestor's Adventures. Then he says it's a clip on. That's when I actually got sad as a kid. Like, oh, Howard's really gone. No. Yeah.
It's a little bit like the characters riding off into the sunset at the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where, you know, you go back and rewatch it. That's got a little more emotional weight after you've seen that for the first time and realize that actually is kind of the end. But, yeah.
It's a good thing the Lone Ranger was coming out for the NES. That is a good game, by the way.
That's a good point, actually.
Don't sleep on that. So then we have Bill's comic, Nestor and Max, the final Howard and Nestor comics. So like 19 years later, after the characters retired.
Which is funny, because I am someone who does, I only consider the original Imai comics to be canon, which is funny that you guys even have me on here, because even I'm like, my own comic doesn't count. It's cute, but blah, blah, blah.
I will say it's a very good approximation. I mean, you're clearly going for Imai's style, because that's what you like.
Yeah, this happened, this all became a thing because of Phil Theobald, who worked at Nintendo Power at the time. He hit me up and was like, okay, hey, don't tell anyone, Nintendo Power's closing down. We want you to do a last Howard and Nestor tribute comic, except we can't use Howard because Nintendo's not quite sure if Howard would sign off on this, and this is all happening so quickly. We don't have time to get in touch with Howard to get the clearances or anything like that. And yeah, I guess Nintendo Power editor-in-chief Chris Slate gave me a script. I only had literally, I think it was a weekend to draw this thing, which killed me. Because I wanted to, I keep on wanting to go back and redraw this strip, because I would love to make it look like, I know I could, if I had the time, make this look like an actual Imai strip, but I only had 3 days. I needed 2 weeks. But yeah, this whole thing came together in literally the course of a weekend. And yeah, it's Ness and his kid Max, which I thought was set up somewhere else, that he's got a kid named Max, I think.
I think in Nintendo Power they did a one-off comic a couple years before yours that was like just Max,
or something like that, it was implied
that, but this was the true final Nestor comic.
Yeah, there are some deep cuts in here, like Maxwell with his finger in the air with a star on the end, which is from the Nestor Awards, which they would have original Nestor art every year.
I think I snuck that in just as, because I love the Nestor Awards and the illustrations for the Nestor Awards so much, which, hey, that's a whole other episode you could do now.
That's when I really run out of ideas.
Yeah. No. There's a lot to talk about. You know, the Super Mario Brothers 2 ending, or the fact that, you know, what I don't know.
That last issue of Nintendo Power was so touching as a longtime reader, like an issue one reader who had, you know, come on and off of it. When I got to see, I'm sure I saw it before the public because I was lucky enough to work in the building with them. When I saw the cover, I was like, this is the perfect cover. Like, this claymation style of Super Mario Brothers aping the Super Mario 2 cover that was the first issue was just perfection.
Yeah, that was sculpted by a friend of mine named Leslie Levings, who she works for J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot Company.
Wow.
That's another thing, because Phil was, we were in the middle of working on this comic, and Phil was like, do you know who anyone sculpts? And I was like, yeah, I know someone who did these like little clay beastly sculpture things that she does for J.J. Abrams and stuff. And so she got looped in to do the cover. I got looped in to do the Howard and Nestor comics. And yeah, again, this is all due to Phil Theobald. He was the one who had the idea to come out and reach out to me. And I guess he was the one, in retrospect, I think he was the one really pushing for there to be a last Howard and Nestor. It's Howard. I keep on wanting to call him something else. Mm-hmm. Howard and Nestor strip in the comic, and also make sure there was a clay cover
for the last issue
that called back to the first issue. That was all Phil Theobald.
And it's the final page of Nintendo Power 2.
Which I forgot about that. This is my copy of that issue. It's been sitting in on my bookshelf for the last couple of years. I forgot it's literally the last thing you see before you... Yeah. Oh, man.
I have also closed out a magazine before, too, so... I know the honor, but it was no one knew it was ending. It was EGM,
which
you've done illustration. You're an EGM illustrator too, right? Or is that just
exactly?
One up?
Yeah, okay, I mean that's
But yeah, your comic
is great. I've killed a lot of magazines.
Your comic is great. The last panel does give me goosebumps. It was the end of an era. It was sort of the end of magazine era too.
Pretty much. No, and it was a moment of like feeling your age, knowing you grew up with this, and you're watching, like, I like that the message of it is there's always more video games to play, but your childhood is dead. Like,
I remember with like email conversations with Chris and Phil, that was one of the things where we didn't want it. It is a maudlin comic, but we didn't want to make it so a boo 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 about it. We wanted to say, hey, this thing is ending, but there's always things to look forward to on the horizon.
Yeah, like you said, it's like, and whoever wrote the comic, it was Phil who wrote it, or
no, Phil facilitated it. Phil wanted to write it, but things were so on fire behind the scenes at Nintendo Power at the time that I think editor in chief believe Chris Slate wound up.
Okay.
I like
the way it's put in the comic where it's like, it's not over, it's 100% complete. It's like full
completion.
Which
is cute.
Yeah. It's a very cute way to wrap things up. But yeah, your comic is online. All of the Nestor comics are easy to find online. Check out Imai's run. I do want to talk about really quick. Nestor made some appearances in video games. But number one, so 2 years after Nestor was dead in Nintendo Power, 2 years after Nestor's Adventures came to a close, there was Nestor's Funky Bowling on the Virtual Boy. I command all of you, go out and watch Jeremy's video. He explains
that says everything you need to know about Nestor's Funky Bowling.
I mean, all you need to know is that it's a bowling game. They've all controlled the same way since the 80s, except that Nestor is in it, and his twin sister Hester is in it, who is a new character exclusive to this game.
Not a discontinuity, I say. I'd say she's not canon.
Yeah. But the main thing you need to know is, like, it is inexplicable. Like, there was not Nestor nostalgia yet. It was 1995. He was discontinued. It could have been anything. It could have been Mario.
It feels like something that Nintendo turned down, that it could be Mario. And it was just the America side was like, this has to star somebody. It can't just be Virtual Bowling.
A meeting needed to end is what
it's Nintendo's equivalent of, like, it's Mr. Pants, where you're like, how the hell did this ever happen? Like, yeah.
Have I met Mr. Pants? Do I know him? But yes, he got his own game for the Virtual Boy. And then he made some minor appearances before that. So before 1995, he appeared, also inexplicably, in the game NES Play Action Football. So when you would finish a game, Nestor would be there, straight up Nestor, telling you who won and who lost in the score. I mean, I don't know why it was Nestor, but he was there.
Somebody's got to say it. So why not the cool kid? I mean, maybe that was they're like, well, Americans know what football is, so have the American kid from that video game comic appear.
That could be it. So also, in other games he's just mentioned. So these are all games that, at least the first two, are games that were pushed really heavily by Nintendo Power. So Dragon Warrior 1, I think they assume that if you play Dragon Warrior, you are a Nintendo Power reader, because we will eventually give this
to you. You probably got your copy of the game through Nintendo Power, yeah.
One of my favorite comics was the Dragon Warrior one they did, just
really
rereading
good.
It now, because it's that whole go back through the back door to open the thing is like, this sucks. This is a stupid secret. And so finally they had a comic that was one of the rare ones where I was on Nestor's side of like, this is dumb that you have to walk around out through
Nestor
the back door.
Nestor was right. So in Dragon Warrior 1, there are characters named Howard and Nestor. And they're not depicted as being those characters as they are visually, but they're in the game.
Well, most of that game is actually text, so it makes sense. Someone would be like, oh, yeah, the mayor of this town is Howard or something like
but
that.
But the little sprites aren't drawn, but I believe, like, people are looking for Nestor, which implies that Nestor has gotten lost or something like that.
Yeah, I beat that game, and I don't even remember that part, yeah.
It's a very, like, minor NPC in Dragon Warrior.
Yeah,
like, there are, like, three NPCs that are, like, notable.
But that's also the same game where they changed what the hero of legend is Link in that game, too. Like, localization has a couple, like,
a few little jokes like that, because it they were getting a little cheekier in that game, which they for the longest time in Dragon Quest localization, they just didn't know how humorous or not to be. It was always a struggle for them.
So in Star Tropics, at a certain point in the game, a character wants to teach you how to fish for a quest or to progress in the game. If you say no, he responds with, is your name Nestor? Because Nestor didn't want to learn shit. Like, it was a joke for Nintendo Power readers.
At least that's keeping in character, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was a cute nod to Nintendo Power. And of course, if you were playing Star Tropics, you were probably a Nintendo Power kid in 1990.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They also did have a Star Tropics comic as well, so that was them paying him back.
I think it's the last EMI comic is Star Tropics.
Mm-hmm. Really? Huh,
yeah.
Okay.
So in the game, To the Earth, who knows why, Nestor is named as the president of the Terrestrial Federation in the credits.
Sure.
I don't know why. It's probably a reference to Nestor, of Nestor and Howard, or Howard and Nestor, but he's there.
Oh, and we didn't even say his name is Nestor because NES.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought about that. I was like,
one of those you could just assume. If you're listening to this podcast, you got that joke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, another very weird nod to Nestor. In Pilotwing 64, the character Link is just Nestor. It is just straight up Nestor.
Nestor. Was there like a rights issue? Because it is obviously just a 3D representation of that character.
Yeah, I don't really understand. I mean, it was made by Argonauts, published by Nintendo. They could get the rights to just put Nestor in there, but I don't know.
By 96,
you never know with publishing rights and stuff like that. Things could get murky over the ages. So,
by
yeah,
96, maybe they just weren't ready. Nobody was in the mood to like rubber stamp it or send a fax, like, or send 80 faxes to yeah, make it happen.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But that is the one 3D representation of Nestor in the
his
world.
Hair is perfect for three dimensions. Yeah, yeah. Like he had
love that hair. That's my favorite thing about the character is those banana slices.
Oh, it's
the
great.
Red. The rooster hair, yeah.
He had Cloud's hair before Cloud.
I was going to say,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Just as this introduced us to manga, it also introduced us to anime hairstyles. Like, yeah. Hair could be weird colors and spiky as you want it to be.
Exactly, yeah.
So my final question, and Bill put something in the notes, I think he's very opinionated on this. Can there be a Nestor without a Howard? Bill, your thoughts?
No, you can't. Nestor is the Jerry Lewis of video game magazine icons. Which, I mean, that's what the Nestor Adventures proved, is that without Howard there to be the straight man.
Yeah, it was like a Martin and Lewis.
It's just a comic about a jackass kid who doesn't know anything. It's,
yeah. He needs to get put in his place by somebody. They should have just created a new Howard type person to tell him like, you're wrong or whatever. Or yeah. Well, Howard was just so nice about it. I think, yeah, the balance doesn't work the same from the first comics that really are just so down to earth of, I'm a kid playing a video game and I'm an adult man explaining
in my room,
tips.
Yeah.
In those ones, the style always was Nestor like can barely stand Howard's presence and it's all just thought balloons and saying like this jerk doesn't know anything. And when you lose that balance, it's just like he definitely became in Nestor's Adventures more of a Bart Simpson for sure.
And even yeah. Bart Simpson by himself, you can't just have a whole cartoon that's Bart Simpson. You need the rest of the family and the rest of the town and something to balance that out because just an asshole by himself, just being an asshole. No matter how much attitude you got, that's just only half of the equation.
Yeah, I think they believed a lot in that character to have him persist after Howard left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had to develop the character and give him a little more just gravitas or just flesh out the character and give him some kind of personality tics that's not just, hey, I'm sassy and I'm stupid. But they didn't do that, so who cared? Yeah,
I guess it says a lot about Nintendo and how well they worked their magic on us where – as kids, we cared about one of their employees leaving.
Yes,
like, exactly.
Howard
the
was
guy
like
who worked in the warehouse. We ascended him to be a god above us.
It's crazy. I mean, it feels like he was the Reggie of his time, but even more endearing than the Reggie that we knew. Mm-hmm.
He was so cool because he had the white Nintendo Power sweatshirt. That made him a golden god. Yeah.
My little brother had that similar sweatshirt, too. But
really?
The ones they sold in stores, but not
I think cool. I made one with I drew on a white shirt with like a magic marker because I didn't get lucky enough to win one from the magazine. But
well, this was, I'm thinking of just. It's crazy to think of it now, but my little brother and I, we both had, I saw it in an old photograph of us. We're just wearing shirts that just have like Mario's face on it that just say Nintendo. Like just the concept of Nintendo was enough for a shirt.
Just the laziest branding extension of just Nintendo. Now, it's Mario's face, the end.
As a kid, I was the type that if I read a magazine like the Boy Scouts magazine, I'd flip straight to the comic, the one-pager comic. And so,
oh, yeah, that was good stuff, too.
I loved Howard Boy's and Nestor life. For that reason. Yeah. And once Howard was gone, I did care a little less. Like, I didn't like his little stinker cartoons as much. And, I mean, my mind knew it, but I could sense it subconsciously. But also, I didn't like the shift in art.
I didn't know I was a weeb yet, so I didn't know why I disliked it. But I will say, number one, there are 18 comics you should read, and they are all like two pages, so it'll take you 10 minutes to get through them. Just search for Howard Nestor comics. You'll find all of them, including Bill's comic, including the lost, never published Dirty comic. Not too dirty, but still
not
a little spicy.
Not dirty, just sassy.
It's PG-13.
Yeah, it's... Mm.
Yeah, but I mean, they're all worth looking at, especially if you like comics. Like, Imai, I don't know if he did a lot of comics. Somebody online was telling me, I was talking about him on Twitter the other day, that they found art books of his, but with none of his game stuff in it.
Oh, shit. I'd actually like to check that out. That'd be fascinating to see.
And he has, like, 5 game credits for things like Alundra 2, like, character design and monster design for certain things. Like, he's done a few game things, I believe just for hire, though.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, I'm sure he's just a freelancer. Yeah, and I'm sure he's probably. Hopefully, he's retired by now. But
I would hope. I hope.
Yeah, I would love to find out more about that guy's stuff. If I ever went to Japan and I'd love to see if I could dig up, like, yeah, find any actual books about his stuff and just see what his work was like outside of Nintendo Powers, because he's legitimately one of my favorite all-time illustrators working in any medium, and he just drew Howard and Nestor for a couple years.
I mean,
that's my only exposure to his work.
We barely talked about his spot art in the magazine, like the Nestor Award stuff, like Final Fantasy, just like random illustrations he would do that were clearly his of the same style, like hyper detailed.
He was so much better than everyone else. You're like, oh my god, oh yeah, okay, yeah, it's that guy. He's so good.
But yes, please read these comics online. They're very fun, especially if you want to see just like how they were envisioning Nintendo games as comics. And I think I kind of didn't say this on the podcast, but one of the reasons I like these comics is because it gave you more of the bigger picture of the game. Like, you saw the flat pixels on the screen, but it was fun to see the characters in the game in these very well done illustrations. So that was another
Well, especially when they were first selling the Final Fantasy, because he did some of the illustrations, spot illustrations for Final Fantasy and Nintendo Power, and he did a really good job bringing to life, like, they kind of learned their lessons from Dragon Warrior. They're like, oh, we got to get better illustrations that better show the characters and stuff like that. And oh yeah, so pizza chef emote. Oh, I love that stuff. So good.
But yes, Shuji Imai, I believe he's still alive. He was only born in 1964, so he's in his mid-50s.
Oh, that hurts. He's only like 25 when he did that stuff.
He was a young man doing these comics.
Oh god, he's home. He's probably ascended to being a god himself. He's had that much more time to get better in the last 30 years.
I really want to see what he's doing now. But Bill, thank you for joining us for Retronauts. I think this is your first time on the show, and it was great.
I think so, yeah. Probably my last, because the way I talk.
I am so disappointed in you. No, this was great. Please, I know you're doing a lot of stuff. You've got a podcast, you've got arts, you've got things for sale. Like, what's going on with you?
We got to cut this short, so I'll just tardytothepartypodcast.com. Tardy to the Party, just Google that phrase. We're the podcast that comes up whenever you Google that. I have a podcast where me and my friend Daniel, we just talk about stuff that we've always wanted to watch or play or listen to before, and the podcast is us finally watching and listening to that stuff. Like, the first episode was me playing Yoshi's Island, because I had never played Yoshi's Island before, but I heard it was so good. We did a whole two-part episode about Final Fantasy VI, because I never played Final Fantasy VI until just a couple years ago, and I always heard that was the best one. And we did all kinds of stuff like that. And mostly it's old movies and stuff. But yeah, we've done some gaming episodes, and that's always been fun. So yeah, Tardy the Party.
Well, and I didn't want you to go before I talked up, like, your Studio Ghibli inspired art is some of my favorite stuff. I have six of your posters up in my hallway.
Oh,
just,
yeah, those are
like,
his. That's right.
I got them framed. They're just so nice.
Yeah, like, I just made those available on it's called imprint.com, but take the I out. It's INPRNT. And I have some gaming maps available at mudrin@bigcartel.com, too. So I've done some video game maps of the old overworlds of some of the Zelda games and Castlevania and stuff like that. So,
really good.
Yeah, I'm just a freelance illustrator. I've got some work at Gallery Nucleus in L.A. right now. They have a big Disney exhibit. And yeah, I'm just a general schmuck. I got nothing in particular. I just draw pop culture stuff.
I don't know if he said this on the podcast, but you can follow him on Twitter at Mudrun, M-U-D-R-O-N. That's his last name. So yes, that's Bill. He's great. And we talked a lot about Nestor. But as for us, if you want to support Retronauts and get our episodes 1 week at a time and at a higher bitrate, please go to patreon.com/retronauts. And for $3 a month, you can adjust that. And that will support our entire network. We don't do Podcast One anymore, so we're not supported by them. So your Patreon dollars are more important than ever. And we couldn't do any of this without you. And those Patreon dollars pay for things like our hosting space and our equipment and renting space to record and, you know, buying guest lunch and paying for artwork and so many things that go into running a small business. So we appreciate anything you can give. We'd like to give you a little bit back in return, so please go to patreon.com/retronauts to find out how to help us and get a little something in return. Henry, how about you? And me.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So these are my plugs, too.
Well, first off, you can follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG. And what I mainly do there is promote all of the podcasts I do with Bob every week. We do the Talking Simpsons podcast, where we go through the entire series of The Simpsons from the beginning. We're getting into season 10 now. Crazy already. It's happened. Plus, we do the What a Cartoon podcast, where me and Bob talk about a different animated series each week. A different episode each time. We've in the past even had on Retronauts co-host Jeremy Parrish for an episode or two, so you should definitely check all of those out. And if you go to our Patreon, you'll get to hear those early and ad-free with a ton of extras. Please check out the Patreon at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
And I've been your host for this one, Bob Mackey. Follow me on Twitter as Bob Servo. And that's it for this episode of Retronauts. We'll see you Monday for a brand new podcast. Thank you so much for listening, folks. Later.